Kuno stepped over Gallantly's corpse to exit the house. He looked over to his right to see that Henry Kuttner was approaching, fully dressed now, with a .45 thonged on his thigh. Gloves were wedged behind his shell belt. He limped slightly on his grazed right leg, blood spotting his denim trousers just below the knee. Kuno stood at the top of the steps as Kuttner moved up past him, his face a bitter mask, and looked down at Gallantly.
Poor son of a bitch.
Kuttner looked at Kuno.
I reckon you're feeling pretty smug. Them engines did a real nice job of proving the point you made over supper last night.
I didn't need their help.
Yep. Feeling pretty smug.
What do I have to feel smug about, Kuttner? Because two of your cork-headed line riders raped an Indian girl, I have a man dead, a burned wagon, and six dead mules. I just watched a pretty girl get mauled on her own kitchen table. And I'm pinned down here with you swarming like bees in a clover field.
Kuno shook his head tightly and squared his shoulders at the foreman.
Don't give me any of your copper-plated grief, Kuttner. I got a burr under my tail and one hell of an itchy trigger finger.
Kuttner's eyes dropped to Kuno's bone-gripped .45 jutting from the holster on the freighter's stout right thigh. They flicked up again to Kuno's face. The foreman said nothing. His features maintained that grave, mask-like expression. Kuno swung around, dropped down the steps, and strode down the hill.
Massey?
Kuno turned.
You got another man down in the bunkhouse.
Which one?
Snowburger.
How bad?
Bad enough.
Shit.
Kuno continued down the hill, moving quickly, his expression grim beneath his hat brim. He slowed, his expression softening when the clatter of a wagon rose in the west. He directed his gaze that way. Through the shadows, the rising sun was spreading across the road and the rolling sage and cedar stippled tableland of the valley beyond the creek and the ranch portal. A wagon was moving quickly along the curving trail, the bay and the traces galloping full out, its jostling mane glistening as the sun peeked over the high eastern ridge. The wagon behind it was a simple farm wagon, painted dark red, with a woman in a long gray dress in the seat, her hair piled atop her head. There were two more people on the seat beside her. Two girls, one a little towhead wrapped in blankets and wearing a pink knit cap with ear flaps. The other girl was older, maybe 17 or 18, with long dark hair and Mexican features. She wore a man's denim jacket over a worn green wool dress, and her felt hat was tied to her head with a spruce green scarf. The morning breeze whipped her hair and her red neckerchief out behind her in the wind. The driver flicked the reins wildly across the charging animal's back. No one drove a wagon at that speed unless they were trying to outrun trouble. Indeed, trouble shone in the face of the woman and the two girls, Kuno saw, as the horse and the wagon bounded over the bridge and under the portal, then angled across the yard and headed up the grade toward the house.
Mr. Trent!
The woman's plain-featured face, Kuno figured she was in her earlier mid-40s, was gaunt and pale, the eyes bright with anxiety and exasperation.
Trent!
The woman hauled the horse to a stop near Kuno and, ramming the brake home, glanced at the freighter.
Is your boss here?
Kuno hesitated, realizing the woman naturally assumed he worked here.
In the house.
He moved toward the wagon as the woman reached to her left and lifted the blonde girl onto her lap. The blonde, between 10 and 12, owned the same blank, shocked look as Kuno had seen in Michelle Trent's face only a few minutes ago. The woman rose in her seat slightly and held the girl down to Kuno, who took the expressionless blue-eyed child in his arms and eased her onto the ground. She set her feet beneath her and looked around as though lost, fear now showing in her face and tears beginning to squeeze out from her eyes and roll down her smooth, plump cheeks streaked with dust and soot. Kuno reached up for the woman and set her down beside the girl. As the woman scrambled around to the back of the wagon, Kuno looked up at the other girl on the driver's seat. Her long, raven hair framed a pretty, oval face, with a straight nose and broad, high, flat cheeks. Tentatively, she moved toward the edge of the wagon. Kuno held up his hand to her. Ignoring his offered help, she steadied herself on the wagon seat, dropped her left foot to the front wheel, and leapt fleetly from there to the ground. She smelled smoky, and her olive features were streaked with soot and dust. There was a slight cut on the nub of her left cheek, and a long, pale scar traced her right jawline. Her eyes grave, she said nothing as she moved up behind the little blonde and set her mittened hands on the girl's shoulders.
All right, boys, go to the house now. Hurry!
Kuno turned. He hadn't seen the boys when the wagon had first pulled up. They'd been hidden by the sideboards and the robes piled in the box. There were two of them, one 7 or 8, the other 13 or 14, both dressed in homespun shirts and patched denim coveralls. They moved out in front of the woman, sullen-faced, eyes downcast. The older one, with his hands in his pockets, and began scuffling toward the house. Trent and Cutner came out onto the porch. Trent, dressed now but hatless, his hair uncombed, negotiated the steps and limped down the grade to the woman and the children.
Louise, for Christ's sakes, what are you doing here?
Indians burned us out, Logan.
The woman ushered the little blonde along ahead of her, her gray skirts swishing about her legs and heavy black shoes.
They killed Harry and the hired man, and they burned everything.
Ah, for Christ's sakes.
Can you send men out after them, Logan?
Trent glanced at Cutner, flanking him, feet spread wide, his thumbs hooked behind his cartridge belts.
Henry's sending men out now, Louise, as many as I can spare.
Trent wrapped an arm around the woman's shoulders, and they all continued toward the house, their backs to Kuno, the Mexican girl tagging along behind the woman and the boys, as though she didn't quite belong. They were drifting beyond Kuno now, mounting the porch.
We too were hit about a half an hour ago. Henry says I lost 5 men, with 3 more wounded. Children, turn away. Henry, get something in cover, Jedediah, for Christ's sakes.
The group headed on into the house, the tall, rangy Cutner bringing up the rear behind the Mexican girl. Kuno hiked his cartridge belt higher on his hips and glanced southward as he continued across the yard, where several drovers, fully clothed now, some wearing bandages or arm slings, were dragging off the dead Indians. Arrows bristled from the log buildings and even a couple of adobe brick hovels and corral slats. Blood smeared the dust and manure of the yard. One Indian, wearing the blue gold-buttoned tunic of a cavalry sergeant and the checked trousers of a whiskey drummer, had piled up against a stock tank fronting the blacksmith shop. His liver-colored innards were piled up in front of his badly torn belly. Half his face was gone, doubtless the work of the cowboy with the barn blaster. Kuno mounted the bunkhouse porch, the floor of which owned several pools of fresh, glistening blood. Serenity was squatting near a water barrel, staring out across the yard.
You hit?
Taking a break. Damn near threw my back out, helping Dallas inside.
How bad's he hit?
Bad.
Will he make it?
I've seen folks make it after worse, but he don't look good. I've seen mad Indians before, but never ones as mad as these.
Kuno moved toward the bunkhouse's open door.
How's it up to the house?
Bad.
Kuno moved into the bunkhouse and squinted around through the wafting powder smoke. One of the drovers, a middle-aged gent with close-cropped gray hair and a goatee, and the Chinaman, Ming, were tending 2 wounded men on bunks to Kuno's left. On a bottom bunk to his right, Dallas Snowberger lay on his side, facing the center of the room and stretching his lips back from his teeth. Dallas's face was pale and sweat-streaked. A blanket was pulled up to his neck, but he was shivering like it was 40 below zero. Kuno dragged a chair up beside Snowberger's bunk and sank into it.
How you doing, Dallas? How bad you hit?
Oh, those sons of bitches!
The freighter used his left hand to slide the blanket back off his left hip. The fletched end of one arrow protruded from his upper right chest, while the fletched end of a second arrow protruded from his left butt cheek.
Seen one trying to sneak around behind the bunkhouse, and I shot him. Didn't see the other one by the privy. Scrawny little savage drilled one arrow through my chest, and when it turned me around and threw me against the bunkhouse, the bastard shot another arrow through my ass.
All right.
Kuno set the palm of his hand over the end of the arrow sticking out of the freighter's chest.
We gotta get this out before you bleed to death.
No, no, no. The hombre over yonder, Riker's his name, used to be an army surgeon. He'll be over here just as soon as he gets that arrow out of the shin of the fellow I fleeced last night at cards. Poor bastard. They scalped him, too. Dragged him off into the brush behind the hay barn and scalped him.
I won $50 off old Shotzi last night, and then, first thing this morning, some Comanche shoots him in the shin, and then him and another and drag him off and scalp him. Damn, it's gotta hurt so fucking bad.
Can I get you anything while you're waiting? Shot of whiskey?
You know what I really like more than anything?
Tell me.
Oh, a cup of hot coffee. Got up so damn fast. Never even had a cup of belly wash yet this morning. Craving a cup real bad, Kuno.
A short time later, Kuno had built a fire and had a big black percolator going. With that done, he walked back over to Snowburger.
It's coming, Dallas. Hold on.
Snowburger nodded slightly.
I'm gonna go outside and see if anyone else needs help.
Back on the porch, Kuno found Serenity taking apart a short-barreled Bisley, setting each part, including bullets, on the red neckerchief spread out beside him. He had his regular two pistols, a Colt Trapper model, and an old rusty Patterson, large as a smithy's hammer, resting on the splintered step between his knee-high lace-up boots. The graybeard glanced over his shoulder at Kuno, squinting one pale blue eye.
Best clean your guns and sharpen your knives. I took this here spare off the man who dropped dead beside me. He ain't gonna need it where he's going, but when old Dancing Wolf returns, I sure am.
Leaping Wolf.
Leaping, dancing. He'll be back just as soon as those five big chunks of wolf bait behind you ride out the southern trail. Take my advice and save a bullet for yourself. As mad as that old war chief is over the killing of his little girl, and I can't say as I blame him one bit, he's fixing to roast us all over low fires while his squaws cut little bitty chunks out of our hides just to hear how loud we can scream.
I just love talking to you when I'm in a tight spot. You always make me feel better.
Hearing the coffee was ready, Kuno went into the bunkhouse, filled a tin cup, and took it over to Snowburger's bunk.
Here you go, Dallas. Good and strong, just like...
The wounded freighter lay as before on his side, only now he wasn't moving. The skin of his face hung slack, and his liquid brown eyes were death-glazed.
Those sons of bitches didn't need to kill Dallas.
Serenity and Kuno stood over the grave that Kuno had dug while the older freighter had fashioned a crude wooden cross from cedar branches and rawhide.
He didn't have nothing to do with raping and killing old Dancing Wolf's daughter.
Kuno stared grimly down at the blanket-wrapped bundle that was Dallas Snowburger lying at the bottom of the black hole.
I told you, Serenity, it's Leaping Wolf.
Leaping? Dancing?
You want to say a few words?
Wouldn't want to embarrass him. Dallas was a man of few words. Too much talking made him antsy.
All right, then.
Kuno picked up his shovel and, sweaty from the half hour he'd spent digging the grave in the sunshine atop a low knoll just east of the Trent Ranchstead, began shoveling the orange dirt and gravel back into the grave.
You have a family? The man never talked to me about anything but mules and wagons. Most I ever heard him say at one time was in the bunkhouse, just before he died, grieving over Shotzi.
He told me one night when whiskey made him downright chatty that he had a ma in Chugwater, said she raised chickens, and that's about all I ever knowed about Dallas, except he liked that pretty little mulatto whore, Liliana and Crowfeather.
If we get out of this, I'll get his pay to her.
If we get out of this, shit!
His old 1862 Colt Trapper model hanging off his hip in its soft, clay-colored holster, and his Colt Patterson wedged behind his cartridge belt, pressed against his belly, Serenity looked around cautiously. He nibbled the ends of his ragged gray mustache.
I got me a feeling that before the sun rises again, hell, maybe before the moon comes up tonight, there ain't gonna be one white man within 100 square miles of this boil on the devil's ass. It's apparent to this yellow-toothed squaw dog that old Dancing Wolf sent up for a whole heap more Utes, and maybe even smoked the peace pipe with a few colicky crows.
It was sunny and clear, and a good thermometer would probably register the low 50s. The valley rolled out to the west, incredibly clear in the cool saffron light, to a steep-walled mesa still pushing out a slight shadow now at 10 o'clock in the morning. In the north and south, many distant peaks loomed blue in the far distance, like summer rain clouds. In the east, the high mountain wall, Old Stoneface, stood tall and vast, almost too much to take in from a half mile out from its base. The ridge was high enough to tickle low cloud bellies. It was bald except for tough, light green shrubs and cedars curling up from the rock-strewn troughs. The talus slides that Kuno could see from this angle appeared thumbnail-sized, but were likely several acres square. He sleeved sweat from his forehead and looked west again at the ranch stead sitting 100 yards away, resembling a child's collection of toy buildings nestled at the base of the mountain, with the gold-leafed aspens and cottonwoods following the curve of the creek at the yard's west edge. Smoke rose from the lodge's several chimneys, and Kuno wondered how Michelle was faring. He no longer harbored any animosity toward the girl. He felt deeply, genuinely sorry for her. He'd have given anything if she'd been able to live out her life holding the convictions she'd espoused over last night's supper, in spite of how they'd piss-burned him at the time, than to have them so abruptly, savagely disproved.
You got better eyes than me.
Kuno resumed tossing dirt into Snowberger's grave.
You see anything out there?
Serenity slowly turned his head from right to left and back again.
Nah, I don't see shit. I don't expect to. We don't see shit till Dancing Wolf is good and ready for us to see shit. Then it's gonna storm shit.
Kuno sunk the shovel blade into the mound of freshly turned dirt once more.
You're a dark son of a bitch, old-timer. Remind me to fire you when we get back to Crowfeather and hire a freighter with a sunnier disposition.
When we get back to Crowfeather.
I know. Shit.
When he'd finished filling in Snowberger's grave and mounding it with rocks, he and Serenity picked up their rifles, leaning against a nearby boulder, cast a parting glance at their partner's resting place, and started back toward the ranch yard.
The way I see it, you and me are on our own. Trent's men are mattering old wet hens, and they're used to being the cock of the walk out here. They're long on range and short on sense.
That's how I see it, too. And if any of them have ever fought Indians before, they done forgot it ain't like fighting white men. It's more like fighting a pack of hungry wolves on open ground.
In other words, we watch each other's backs.
I got yours if you got mine. We best make every shot count. Even with all the ammo we brought in, we're liable to run out if them red devils play cat and mouse with us. They're likely to draw our fire the way the Sioux did to my freight outfit in the Bighorn 6 years ago last October. When we're close to shout out and our nerves are so fried that we're shooting at every breeze and bird chirp, they'll close like a friggin' twister. And that little dust-up earlier looked like a 4th of July rodeo parade.
So you're saying our odds are a mite long?
Long?
They strode between two haystacks, approaching the eerily quiet yard.
Long as the teeth on a 50-year-old whore, amigo.
Kuno stopped abruptly and stared west through the cottonwoods.
What is it?
Look there.
A long mare's tail of dust rose beyond the trees from 100 yards out across the tumbling hills of the valley.
Hell, catoot!
A horse appeared, and then another, galloping out from behind a low hill and following a long curve in the trail toward the ranch yard. Three more horses followed the first two in a shaggy line. A couple of duns, a paint, a bay, and a short bucket-headed buckskin. Kuno recognized all five horses from the corral in which Trent kept his working Ramuda. He squinted at the five mounts, curving off toward his right, heading for the portal and the bridge. The horses were riderless, but long packs appeared to be strapped over their saddles.
Shit!
Kuno and Serenity figured out what the horses were carrying at the same time, and both men lurched forward, cleaving the gap between the bunkhouse and the cook shack, where a couple of drovers sat on upended logs, smoking and drinking coffee, one dabbing at a wound on his cheek with a handkerchief.
Hey, where are you two going in such a damn hurry?
I do believe your friends are back.
Serenity and Kuno passed the two loafers and headed into the hard-packed ranch yard.
Company! We've got company!
Two hands leapt down from the corral west of the shop, where they'd apparently been posted to keep watch with new rifles, jumped into the yard suddenly and sprinted west. A couple of other men filtered out of the stables and the bunkhouse as the horses thundered into the yard.
Grab him!
The big bearded blacksmith, Hansbach, reached for the dun's reins. He wore a black leather apron over his buckskin breeches, and the sleeves of his linsey tunic were rolled up to his bulging biceps. Kuno set his rifle and shovel down against the bunkhouse. He rushed the buckskin suddenly and grabbed its reins up close to its bit. The end of the reins had been tied around its saddle horn.
Yow!
Serenity moved up to the buckskin's right side. A body dangled across the saddle, gloved fingertips nearly brushing the ground. A 3-inch hide-wrapped braid curled up over the back of the dead man's head. Two arrows protruded from his back. What had caught the brunt of Kuno's attention was the top of the man's head, which was as red as freshly butchered beef where the scalp had been hastily sliced and ripped away.
Son of a bitch! Murdering savages!
Kuno knelt down beside the buckskin and lifted the chin of the man draped across its back. The blood-smeared face and half-closed eyes and slack-jawed mouth of Henry Cutner stared back at him, salt and pepper hair curling along the sides of his hacked-up head. Feeling as though he'd been punched in the gut, Kuno released the foreman's chin and straightened. He looked around at the other horses, all carrying arrow-pierced dead men, surrounded by 10 or so drovers and the Chinese cook, all regarding the grisly cargoes with looks ranging from disbelief to rage. The men, some holding the reins taut, moved slowly around the horses. The coppery stench of blood filled the mild late morning air. Kuno raked his gaze from the body of Henry Cutner, hanging slack down the buckskin side, to the big lodge, sitting bathed in clear golden sunshine at the mountain's base, smoke still unspooling from its big stone chimneys. Logan Trent was making his way down from the house, limping and dragging one boot heel. He was dressed as he'd been dressed last night, in baggy denims with a clawhammer coat over a doe-skin tunic embroidered in red and blue thread. From his broad hips hung a Colt long cylinder conversion with pearl grips and a big bowie knife in an elaborately beaded buckskin sheath. On his curly silver head, he wore a black stovepipe hat boasting a red-tailed hawk feather. He came on grimly, the lump on the side of his nose looking larger today than it had yesterday. His eyes were pinched and dark. He raked his gaze across the horses, and his men sort of shuffled back away from him slightly, looking somehow guilty and dread-filled. The rancher stopped at the edge of the grouped horses, his back to the hulking, sun-blasted lodge, brown hands on his hips.
Boss!
Kuno and Trent whipped their heads around to see the man pointing across the corral of milling ranch horses. Kuno's throat tied itself in a knot when he saw five braves sitting five short-legged, broad-barreled Indian ponies side by side across the main trail on the near side of the ranch's wooden portal. Close enough so that Kuno could see the sun reflecting off their heavily painted faces, as well as the new Winchester repeaters in their hands. Instantly, Kuno and the other men clawed their pistols from their hips and looked around wildly, expecting to find a horde of the Red Devils swarming onto them from all directions. But there were only the five, sitting their war-painted ponies at the south edge of the ranch yard, staring with silent menace toward Kuno, Trent, Serenity, and the Waddies. As Kuno sidestepped toward the west edge of the yard, continuing to swing his cautious gaze in all directions, he got a better look at the five braves. All five were painted for war, with feathers braided into their long obsidian hair, which framed the brick-red ovals of their faces. They wore wolf or bear or coyote skins from their heads to their furry moccasins, though one brave wore patched denims. Quivers bristling with feathered arrows jutted up from behind their backs. Bows were slung over their shoulders, and war clubs dangled down their thighs. But in their hands, resting butt down against their hips, were the Winchester rifles they'd taken off Cutner and the other men they'd recently killed. The smooth, freshly varnished stocks and oiled receivers glistening in the cool high country sun.
Oh, for Christ's sakes.
Instantly, Kuno saw what the rancher saw. From the barrels of the new Winchesters dangled five scalps, four in various shades of brown. The fifth one, of wavy pewter, had belonged to the foreman. When the breeze jostled the grisly trophies, Kuno could see their bright red undersides. His gut clenched, and he squeezed the ivory grips of his Colt in his right hand. The five were just out of pistol range, and Kuno and the ranch hands had all rushed into the yard with only their six-shooters. Trent had edged up toward Kuno, his big pearl-gripped pistol cocked and extended in his right fist.
Where's Leaping Wolf?
The Indians said nothing. They just stared brashly toward the ranch yard, their molasses-colored eyes unreadable within the bizarre rings of war paint.
I said, where's Leaping Wolf, you cow-eyed savages?
Trent adjusted his grip on the big conversion pistol in frustration as the five Indians merely stared back at him as though he weren't there. Finally, one of the braves, a stocky Ute with high, ridged cheeks and wearing a bearskin tunic and Levi's with the cuffs stuffed down into high, brightly beaded doeskin moccasins trimmed with rabbit fur at the top, gave a grim smile. A couple of teeth appeared between his leathery lips. Then, in unison, all five swung their horses around, touched heels to flanks, and galloped west, heading back the way they'd come. No doubt riding off to join the rest of their band, hunkered down behind the near ridges, trapping the ranch hands and Trent and Kuno and Serenity at the base of Old Stoneface, with nowhere to run or hide, even if they were inclined to. The Utes rounded a second curve about 100 yards across the valley and disappeared, their dust sifting behind them.
Won't we should go after them, Mr. Trent? There's only five. We could catch them before they rejoin their group.
Trent continued staring after the braves for a long time. Then, as though awakening from a trance, he cast his faintly chagrined, coyote-like glance at the hands staring at him expectantly.
Grab your rifles and spread out. Make a complete circle around the ranch yard, anywhere there's cover. Use two quick shots to signal an attack.
What about the dead man, Mr. Trent? Shouldn't we bury him?
We'll bury him tomorrow.
Trent wheeled awkwardly on his bad leg and started up the grade toward the lodge. He stopped so suddenly that he almost tripped over his bad leg and drilled that owly gaze at Kuno.
Massey!
He jerked his head toward the house.
We got an important matter that needs discussing.
He turned again and continued limping on up the grade. Kuno glanced at Serenity, frowning.
Now, what'd you do?
Maybe he doesn't like the rifles, especially when they end up in the hands of the Indians.
Kuno walked slowly up to the house, looking around and listening, seeing nothing but sunlight and sage and occasional dust devils when the cool breeze stirred. When he got close to the house, he looked up to see the woman who'd brought the kids in earlier, standing next to a window.
That's Mrs. Lassiter. She's upstairs with Michelle.
Kuno stopped in his tracks and dropped his eyes to the porch. Trent sat in a deep wicker chair, skinny legs crossed. He had a stone mug of coffee and a small uncorked bottle of rye whiskey on an overturned barrel beside him. Also on the barrel was his old conversion pistol. An 1860s model single-shot buffalo rifle leaned against his chair, a long, heavy gun that probably fired a thumb-sized bullet of around 70 grains of gunpowder. Good at long range, but overkill up close, and the breech loader was slow to reload.
How's your daughter, Mr. Trent?
Kuno continued onto the porch and climbed the steps.
I'm leaving her to Mrs. Lassiter. I can't bear to go up there now myself. Poor girl's never experienced such horror. Have a chair. Would you like a cup of coffee? Ron done made some fresh. I like it with a jigger of rye these days. Takes the sting out of my hip. No thanks to a green broke stallion I, at my age, never should have been trying to finish off in the first place.
No thanks.
Kuno crossed in front of Trent and moved to the far west edge of the porch, from where, through some scattered cottonwoods and cedars, he could see past a hayfield to the open valley beyond.
My stomach's feeding on itself the way it is.
Kuno glanced over his shoulder at the man.
Isn't yours?
Of course. A man'd be a fool not to be afraid with them Injuns on the lurk. They're out there waiting. I can smell them. Leaping Wolf's band and several other bands he probably called in from Wyoming. Gonna give us wide eyes our just desserts.
Trent lowered his eyes bemusedly. What the hell was he laughing at? Kuno saw little to laugh at. In fact, since watching Trent's daughter mauled on Trent's own kitchen table, he'd found nothing to laugh about this morning at all. Kuno turned his head back westward. His eyes saw Indians in every rock shadow and breeze-jostled twig. His palms were perpetually sweaty.
You said you wanted to talk to me, Trent.
Behind him, only silence. Kuno turned to see the rancher staring solemnly west. Not like he was seeing anything, except maybe a memory or two. Maybe memories of when he first came to this country and beat this ranch out of the brush.
Trent,
The rancher turned to him slowly, his gray eyes glassy. Suddenly he blinked, and recognition returned to his gaze.
What would you say to hitching up one of your wagons and getting my daughter and the last of the kids the hell out of here?
Out of here? You're hemmed in by Indians on three sides. Might even be some behind the house. Even if you aren't totally surrounded, in case you haven't checked recently, you got one hell of a high granite ridge behind you. The only way out of here is to fly, and my wagons haven't sprouted any wings.
There's a way through the ridge about 1 mile north. About 6 years ago, an earthquake widened a natural cleft, slid the mountain apart like Moses parting the Red Sea, just wide enough for a wagon and a team of mules. Once you're through the cleft, you still got a piece of work ahead of you, climbing and winding through the rawhides, but you can make it with the wagons. I'll draw you a map.
Where might we be heading?
I want you to get my daughter and the last of the kids over to Fort Jessup on the eastern slopes of the mountain. It ain't much of a fort, just what's left of a trading post, but the army usually keeps about 50 men and a Gatling gun there over the winter to monitor the gold camps as well as the engines in this area.
Kuno studied the rancher. Trent stared back at him, and there was little of the folly that had been in his eyes a few moments ago. He looked clear, and he looked serious.
I'll pay you. $1,000, in addition to that draft I already wrote you. Cash.
You don't think you have a chance here?
I know, Mr. Leaping Wolf. I made a truce with him about 15 years ago, after 10 years of skirmishing with his cow-stealing braves. He's a hard man. What my men did to his daughter...
Trent shook his head again, and his eyes turned dark as he cast his look westward again, across the valley toward the mesa.
Well, he hasn't even started to get even for that. You see, his son was supposed to take Michelle out of here, so Leaping Wolf could kill her in his own creative fashion and then send the parts back to me. One at a time, most like. If he'd done that, I might have been able to hold on to the ranch. But Leaping Wolf failed, and that means he'll be back with every man he has. Maybe tonight, maybe at first light tomorrow. And he won't leave a single log unburned or a brick uncharred. What he'd do to her, if he got a hold of her? I don't even want to think about young Massey. A bit ago, I almost went upstairs and put a bullet through her head to spare her the grief of what she's already been through and that which is coming. But then, when I was talking with Runs with Ponies earlier, I remembered the fault in the mountain wall.
He turned his hard, sad, desperate eyes on Kuno.
It's a long shot. But here, you got no shot at all.
Kuno was more than a little taken aback by the casualness with which Logan Trent spoke of putting his daughter out of her misery.
I don't know. Trying to light out in those wagons seems mighty risky. We could get run down before we even make the cleft. Even if we make the high country, it's no doubt nearly winter up there. The wagons could get bogged down in deep snow, and we'd all freeze. Or starve. I'd say those kids and your daughter have better odds here than in the lodge.
You don't know Leaping Wolf. I do. He'll attack, and when he does, we're all gonna think hell split wide and spit out 1,000 howling demons. The last of the kids and Michelle have a better chance with you. As for snow in the high country, it don't usually get socked in up there till late next month. You should be able to make the run in a week if all goes well. If not... There's plenty of caves and abandoned trappers' cabins. You could hole up in those if you need to wait out a squall while you fixed a wagon wheel.
Both wagons?
You'll need both in case you lose one, and to haul supplies, foodstuffs, and ammunition.
Might have it easier on horseback.
Michelle can't ride in her condition, and neither can the last of the girl, Margaret. A good mule skinner, and one who's also good with a .45, has a fair to middling chance of getting them through.
Kuno had already made up his mind that Trent was probably right, but something still held him back.
Look, Mr. Trent, I've never run from a fight. You're gonna need all the help you can get here.
No, you don't owe me your life, Kuno. I appreciate the sentiment. Damn little of it in the house of late, as you saw last night. But if you stay here, any man who stays here is going to die here. My men have no choice. They signed up to ride for the Double Horseshoe brand. You're the best of all the men here with a team of mules and a gun. And I am begging you to at least try to get my daughter and the Lassiter children to safety. Be a damn shame if they all burned up here on account of something my men did.
You sure it's not over then?
I'm sure. He'll attack once more. Only once more. Probably make us wait the rest of the day. Hit us tonight after sundown. Really make us soil our drawers, waiting and imagining what his braves have in store for us. If you're of a mind, I'd like you to pull out at dusk. There'll be a moon, so you shouldn't have trouble finding the route. I'll map it out for you. Leaping Wolf will be watching the main trail out of here and all routes through the Western Valley. He won't cover the cleft.
What if you're wrong?
Trent stared at Kuno with watery gray eyes that were pink around the rims, and his Adam's apple wriggled around in his leathery neck with barely restrained emotion.
Well, it won't really make that much of a difference, will it? But if it looks like you won't make it, I'd like you to promise me you'll end it quickly for Michelle.
What if he hits before dusk?
You'll be ready to pull out at the drop of a hat, young firebrand. I'll have Mrs. Lassiter prepare the children.
She won't be joining us?
A fever a while back did something to her ticker. She'd never make it. Couldn't take the strain or the cold in the back of that wagon. I owe her this, poor woman. Saw him only about 3-4 times a year. But her and her husband and me were friends. Damn few friends out here.
It was a question that Kuno knew he shouldn't ask, but his curiosity got the better of him.
What happened to your wife, Mr. Trent? Where are the sons you mentioned last night?
Trent looked up at him, blinked first one eye and then the other quickly, as though the question had taken him off guard.
Dead? One boy, Philip, rolled his horse into a ravine. The other one fancied himself a pistolier, Logan Jr. Got liquored up, and a gambler shot him down, dead in a week old side of bad beef in Ute. My wife had thinner blood than Ike, you know. She couldn't withstand such grief in addition to the general hardship of living out here with a singular old reprobate like myself. She walked out into a blizzard nigh on 3 years ago now. Didn't find her till spring. Frozen rock hard as she sat against a tree, staring east at old Stoneface. Strange the way things happen. After you tried so damn hard for so damn long to carve out a good life for yourself.
Kuno knew how the man felt. He often felt the same way. Now he felt a sudden, unexpected pang of sympathy for Logan Trent. He sensed the man's desperation. It was a catching feeling. He glanced into the distance. The shadows were growing, and in every one he saw a flicker of movement. The Indians slowly closing in for their final act of vengeance.
Serenity and I'll prepare the teams and wagons.
Kuno, you haven't yet promised me about that bullet for my daughter.
Kuno ran a sleeve across his chin. He nodded.
All right.
He turned and continued down the hill toward the stables. An hour before dusk, Kuno and Serenity had the wagons ready. The mules were leathered up and hitched to the double trees. Renegade was saddled and tied to the back of Kuno's outfit. The skewbald paint would be used, as Kuno always used him, for scouting. The freighters had outfitted the wagon with a month's worth of food and trail supplies and plenty of skins, robes, and quilts to ward off the high country cold. They also packed one extra Winchester and several boxes of ammo. At dusk, Trent came out from the house, carrying his old buffalo rifle over his shoulder. He reeked of booze, but he looked no drunker than before. Kuno and Serenity were eating jerky and drinking coffee on the open tailgate of one of the wagons.
You fellas ready?
Kuno nodded. Trent had brought down a hand-drawn map earlier, and he, Kuno, and Serenity had gone over it thoroughly.
Drive around to the back of the house. I'll have the youngins waiting by the back door. In a half hour, the hands are going to start a fire on the other side of the creek. Give the engine something to ponder while you're heading northeast along the mountain toward the canyon that'll take you to the gap.
With that, Trent looked around warily, squinting his rheumy eyes beneath the brim of his shabby, feather-trimmed opera hat. Then he limped back up the hill to the house, sitting dark and silent, its chimneys spewing gray smoke against the near-dark sky. It was full dark when Kuno and Serenity swung their wagons up the slope behind the Trent Lodge, Renegade tied to the rear of Kuno's Conestoga. The house was dark, and the ghostly figures of Trent, the Lassiter woman, the two boys, the young blonde girl, Margaret, the Mexican, whose name Kuno hadn't learned, and Michelle Trent stood huddled in blankets near a large cottonwood. Trent stood with an arm wrapped around his daughter. Michelle held a buffalo robe around her shoulders, and for a moment Kuno remembered the first time he'd seen her, soaking wet on stairs and wrapped in a similar garment. She'd been worried that Kuno wouldn't return to the lodge to entertain her father. So much had happened in the past 24 hours, but last night seemed months ago. She'd been brutalized by Leaping Wolf's braves, and her well-heeled bow, Jedediah Gallantly, had died miserably in his silk long handles with an arrow through his gut. Kuno climbed down out of the driver's box and grabbed a couple of the carpet bags standing around the base of the cottonwood. He looked at Michelle Trent as her father led her to the back of the wagon. She moved as though in a dream, not saying anything. Then he suddenly stooped, picked her up in his arms, and lifted her up into the back of the wagon box. Michelle said nothing. She unwrapped her arms from around her father's neck, turned, and quickly sat down amongst the robes and blankets, patting the floor and the sides of the box. She drew her knees up to her chest, hugging them, and held her head forward, staring out from beneath the flat brim of a man's bullet-crowned hat. The hat was tied to her head with a thick red scarf. She wore a heavy blanket coat over a simple traveling dress and low-top, lace-up black boots. Beneath the hem of the dress, several layers of underwear showed. The Mexican girl, oddly silent, grimly purposeful, climbed into the box and sat down beside Michelle, arranging a couple of buffalo robes over them both, as well as Margaret. The Mexican girl was dressed as before in layers, with a long denim coat and several wool skirts, a red neckerchief, and her floppy-brimmed hat tied to her head with a green scarf. On her feet were fur-trimmed knee-high moccasins. As Kuno loaded the bags into the wagon, they'd reserved Serenity's wagon for the trail supplies, allowing plenty of room in Kuno's for the passengers, he saw Trent standing at the Conestoga's open tailgate, staring along the box at his daughter. He seemed to want to say something, but couldn't come up with the words. Finally, as Mrs. Lassiter's boys climbed reluctantly into the box, the rancher backed away from the tailgate in a shuffling, halting gait and ran a handkerchief across his nose. When all the children were aboard the wagon, Trent grabbed Kuno's arm. In his other hand, he held up a burlap pouch.
This is all the cash I have here at the ranch. $5,500. There's $1,000 for yourself and Mr. Parker upon your arrival at Fort Jessup. The rest is for my daughter. Also in the pouch is a letter to my sister in Cleveland explaining the situation in case Michelle is still unable to explain it herself. Mildred will take Michelle in and give her a home. Please see that she gets the letter and the money.
Kuno took the pouch.
She'll get both, Mr. Trent.
Kuno glanced at Michelle, still sitting and staring as before beside the dark-haired girl.
I take it she's...
She won't say a thing. Just stares off as though seeing those savages that ravaged her. I don't know if she even knows what's going on. Mrs. Lassiter's hired girl has promised to look after her.
What's the hired girl's name?
I forget. Some orphaned half-breed out of Mexico. Dime a dozen around here. She'll help with Michelle. Might be best if she doesn't wake up from this nightmare until you arrive at Fort Jessup.
Don't worry, Trent. She'll be all right.
Good luck, you know. Farewell. If you get them through, I'll be smiling down on you. Bald-headed as I may very well be.
Kuno climbed up onto the Conestoga's driver's seat. In the other wagon, Serenity sat in his own driver's box, keeping a taut hold on his team's reins and staring around the house toward the open valley. Kuno followed the graybeard's gaze. A bright glow shone south of the ranch yard, just beyond the creek, and partially obscured by the breeze-jostled brush and trees.
There's your signal. Hurry on, gentlemen. Keep an eye out for the cleft. If we make it, I'll send a rider for you.
Good luck, Trent.
Kuno angled the team toward the vast mountain wall looming on his right, following a shallow ravine that he hoped would muffle the rattle of the wagon and the clomps of the mule's hooves. Occasionally, he looked back over the wagon bed and the trailing skewbald paint to see Serenity pulling the second Conestoga along behind him, about 20 yards back of Renegade, starlight glistening off the oiled tack and metal fittings and of the graybeard bristled cheeks. It was good to have Serenity here. He'd hate to have to rely on only himself to get these kids safely across the Rawhides to Fort Jessup. Serenity knew the mountains and the Indians as well as he knew wagons and mules. And Kuno had more than a few times relied on the oldster's wily wisdom. And he was a comforting, if cantankerous, companion. He and Kuno had been through a lot together. Kuno kept his Winchester close beside him on the wagon's high seat. The ravine walls dropped back behind Kuno, and the mountain wall angled toward him, the creased and crenellated slope rising about 20 yards to his right, strewn with boulders, troughs, brush snags. As Trent had shown him on the map residing in Kuno's right tunic pocket, there was a wagon trail here, two pale lines cleaved by a swatch of spindly buckbrush and sage. It had been carved by Trent's men during roundups and woodcutting expeditions into the Rawhides, and it would lead them to the cleft that would in turn grant them passage into the greater range. Kuno pulled the wagon onto the trail. As the Conestoga began moving straight north along the uneven line to the mountain's base, Kuno glanced to his left and then back toward the ranch headquarters. Nothing but darkness, interrupted by the sparse, starlight-limbed shapes of cottonwoods, cedars, or boulders. Kuno slid the rifle onto his lap and balanced it there as he swung his gaze back and forth between the trail and the western darkness, expecting to see the silhouettes of rampaging Indians storming toward him at any moment, arrows whistling. The uneven mountain wall moved forward and back on the right, and Kuno kept watching for the large cracked boulder of lightning-topped pine that, according to Trent, marked the entrance to the gap that led to the mouth of the cleft. To his left, he watched and listened for the Indians, resisting the urge to whip the mules into a run that would speed his approach to the gap, but would also raise a din the Utes might hear. Anxiety nipped at him. If the Indians came now, he and Serenity wouldn't have a chance against them. Finally, the cracked boulder appeared, just beyond the lightning-topped pine. Between lay a gap as wide as two wagons. Relieved that he hadn't somehow passed it, Kuno turned the mules into the canyon mouth and whipped the reins across their backs. Kuno glanced over his shoulder. Serenity's team was trailing close behind Renegade, who followed Kuno's wagon with his head and tail arched, no doubt sensing the human's desperation. The canyon angled back into the mountain, at times barely wide enough for one wagon, then opening again to a width of 50 or 60 yards. The floor was scalloped sand and gravel with occasional boulders fallen from above. The smell of minerals and bat guano clung to the cool air. Trent said the offshooting gap they were looking for lay about 200 yards within the Box Canyon, and that they couldn't miss it on the darkest night. Not necessarily a good thing, because it meant the Indians would find it too. Kuno didn't want to get trapped in there with a horde of screaming Utes on his tail. At first, Kuno thought he heard the sounds of a hunting coyote pack. But then a bayonet of dread poked at his gut. He looked behind. Serenity had heard the cries as well, and was turned to gaze along their back trail. Kuno could see the tension in the old man's back and shoulders. He turned toward Kuno, who could see only the man's gray sombrero and gray beard in the darkness.
Got me a suspicion they're on to us.
The young freighter swung his head forward. At the same time, the gap shone in the wall to his left, just wide enough for one wagon at a time. It was the gap they were looking for. Kuno glanced at Serenity once more.
Found the crack.
The air in the gap felt a good 10 degrees colder than the air in the larger canyon. When Serenity stopped his own Conestoga, Kuno turned to look into the wagon bed behind him.
Which one of you boys wants to take the reins for me?
Both boys sat against the right side of the wagon bed, the younger blonde kid's head only coming up to the older boy's ear.
I will.
The older boy, who had longish brown hair curling over his ears beneath a heavy brown scarf, securing his felt hat down tight on his head, scrambled to his feet. Jack's older brother climbed over the front of the box and into the driver's seat. The older boy was probably about 5'4", all arms, legs, hands, and feet, with his big ears protruding from the hand-knit scarf on his head.
Drive a team before?
Kuno handed the boy the reins.
Some.
Carl looked at the leather ribbons in his mittened hands as though at a book he was having trouble deciphering. Kuno grabbed his Winchester and sidled to the edge of the wagon.
Just keep them moving at an even pace. They're scared as hell in this pit, so the trick will be to keep them moving. Shouldn't have to worry about them running away on you. Don't drop the reins, though, or you'll be in trouble.
Carl nodded as he wriggled around in the seat and stared straight out over the mule's backs, his back straight and tense. Kuno dropped to the floor of the defile and quickly untied Renegade's reins from the back of the Conestoga.
What are you ciphering? Sounds to me like there's quite a damn few riding pretty damn fast.
I'm gonna ride back and give him something to study on.
Kuno led Renegade to the cleft's wall and swung into the saddle next to Serenity's wagon.
Whatever you do, keep the wagons moving.
Yeah, it's way too early to stop for a picnic.